Should we start with mentioning the maybe at the top and at the bottom the Oscar stream?
Oh, sure.
When this airs, it'll be like that week, that following Sunday.
So. Yeah. On the Duds Twitch channel. I wish there was a way to simulcast literally any of it, but
yeah, it'll have to be a watch along or
yeah,
commentary track.
Because we tried to do it a couple years ago. I think it was like you, me, and Moose.
Yeah. And I think we, like, I shared it to you guys that way.
Yeah. Or, like, I did a free trial of YouTube TV that I had to cancel immediately because it would have been, like, I feel like it was, like, $100-something a month or something like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's very expensive for fucking YouTube TV.
I mean, that being said, the YouTube premium is nice. I'll never go back after that, but.
Is it? Like no ads and shit.
No ads, yeah. Even on mobile, because I mean, on desktop, I'm using ad blocker, so like I don't get ads anyway. But there's nothing worse than having like a girlfriend who hates watching videos on the phone, and then you're like trying to show her a YouTube video, and then he's like, "Oh no! That reminds me of this one scene from this one show," and then you find it, and then you click on it to show her, and then it's just like. Dawn Freshener will get your clothes. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, you already don't want to watch this video, and now you have to sit through 2 30-second ads, and it's like, ah. So, that alone is a perfect feature for me.
How much is YouTube Premium?
I'm on, like,
an ad for YouTube Premium now.
Yeah. Say, how much is that YouTube? I'm on a, like, family plan with, like, Evan and a few other people.
Oh, okay.
So, I think I paid once. It's, like, an annual thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty nice. Kind of similar to the like the Nintendo Switch thing we have with like the online family plan.
Yeah.
Plus, what's cool. Sorry, one more little plug for YouTube Premium. And it's a feature that YouTube, I think, is evil that they make you have to pay for it. Because on mobile, like with Twitch or like if you're watching a video in a Chrome tab, you can like pop it out. And like scroll, you can still move on your phone and there's like a little picture-in-picture video player. Like Twitch does that. YouTube doesn't unless you pay for premium. It's like something the phone has native to it, but right, YouTube like blocks it because they're like, no, you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
Also, you can listen like while your phone is in lock screen mode.
That would be nice.
Yeah. Like I remember when I wasn't cynical and jaded by politics, the 2020 election cycle, I got out of work once and I did a free trial of the YouTube Premium so I could like listen to the debates in the background while also scrolling Twitter and watching people's like live reactions or discussion of it. And I was like,
damn. It took you till 2020 to become cynical and jaded towards politics.
Well, this is like around the time that I'm getting Facebook memories that's like, I'm donating to Bernie. Come on. He just won Iowa. We're going to do it. And then everything went to shit. I mean, we're almost 3 years out of COVID, which is what happened. Like, it's all a blur. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Speaking of Bernie. Boop.
There's multiple Bernies. There's multiple Bernies in this episode.
Oh, yeah, true. Okay. I gotta go for a minute. Okay. I'll be back in a few
minutes.
You're
good. Okay. Yeah, you're good. Yep. Oh, welcome back, everybody. The name of this podcast is There Won't Be TJ. This is the Talking Duds, Talking Heads companion podcast. The name of this podcast is There Won't Be TJ. I'm bad at shit talking. What am I? I don't even know what to say here. Lose cat. Lose cat down there. This cat's, he's dumb, I guess. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry, kitty. Man, what else? What we got going on in this room here? Shrek, Puss in Boots, Saxon Charbino. What a shill for DreamWorks. You could probably cut this, TJ. I just wanted to say the name of this podcast is There Won't Be TJ. Because it's like Talking Heads themed. I'm going to stop now. Oh, where's this cat going? Ooh, steal a seat. That's what my cat does. As soon as I get up, I feel like my cat has like predator vision. And she can see the warmth of my chair where my ass was. She says, I want to be up in that warm ass chair. Yeah, you do really kind of run out of steam with these. I don't know how people do solo podcasts like this. This is awful. But now I feel like I'm pot committed and I have to keep talking. Because otherwise it's just awkward silence and I'm just, it's like, you know, it's like what the FBI sees when they tap your phone. They just see some guy on the other end sitting silently scrolling like, and that's what I look like if I'm not talking constantly. Is that a Yoda body pillow? Is that a cutout? What is that? It looks a little faded, like he's been sitting in the back of your car in the sun. Getting skin cancer, I am. Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. Big melanomas. But he just like uses his Jedi mind skills to pop the tumors. It's like, oh. Oh my God. That's so perfect. Holy shit. Please. Oh, please tell me you're wearing that. Please tell me you're wearing that for the whole episode.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I had like the accompanying pants.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I had a, I have like, a, it's not the same color. Yeah. But I had like a white suit that's like more my size. Mm. And I thought about starting the show with that. And then when we got to like the ad break, like
come coming back
with switch. This or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, eh. Welcome back. I'm out of my webcam now. I'm too tall. welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to There Will Be Duds. This is episode 88. And I am your co-host, TJ, aka J Spot Jack Cheese. And with me, as always,
as always, I'm Nick, aka Dr. Funk on Twitch.
And as always, we watched a movie this week. That movie being Stop Making Sense from 1984, directed by Jonathan Demme. It's a concert film of the band Talking Heads on their tour promoting their album Speaking in Tongues, which featured a lot of their hits. Or some, I guess I'll say some famous hits, like Burning Down the House being probably the biggest one off the album.
Yeah, that's the opening track on that album.
Yeah, that's it. I'm trying to fluff out the synopsis, but it is just a concert movie. I threw it in because it's considered to be like the best concert movie ever, or like one of the best. And obviously I'm going to be pretty biased because I like the band. So this might be unfairly weighted against the norm, like the rest of the movies in the cup, but yeah.
Yeah, that would be funny if this movie unseats all of the other like top movies that we've rated simply because we like the band.
Yeah. that's it. It's a concert movie. I did take more notes than I was expecting.
I took a few.
Mostly. And it's not just, oh, that was cool when he did this. That was cool when they did this or something like that.
Yeah. I think my first note was Jimmy Stewart ass body. That's,
oh yeah,
David Byrne. Totally. Seeing like, because I'm used to like present David Byrne. So seeing him that young is
weird. Or he's like he's older, so he's kind of like a little more filled out, sort of.
But this one, yeah, they were all like in peak shape, but it's like, yeah, man, if I went on tour and danced my ass off like that every single night, mm-hmm. I'd be in the shape of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Like running laps around the stage and.
Or like
high step into while you're playing guitar and stuff. Yeah.
Like the little opening segment when someone off screen had the little vibrator in his butt, and every time it would.
Yeah.
You'd do one of those.
Yeah.
Very silly. It was nice to see him being silly. Because I think usually when I think of David Byrne, I think of like this very socially awkward kind of, yeah, like big-eyed, like almost like nervous looking dude. And so seeing him like kind of like smile and dance and like put on a show was very nice.
Yeah. I mentioned that to Kalia, that it was like finding the cracks in the seam of like him like breaking a smile every time he's trying to be like do his stone face thing, but then like, you know, he like can't help but smile when he's like, I don't know, dancing with the backup singers or something like that. And there's a lot of like close ups like that where you can see it.
Or like the lamp. Like the
lamp dance.
He's clearly having a good time with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. I love the, it says like, you know, conceived for the stage by David Byrne, which I think is kind of his thing. He does that for like all of his shows. Apparently, he says that he thinks, or I read like a quote, I don't remember the exact thing, but about like music being like as much like a visual medium as it is an audio medium. So that's why he choreographs them. And
yeah, there's a visual element to all of it. Like, yeah, even like Tina's dancing, they're all kind of like coordinated in some spots. You know, they're all wearing similar sort of colored outfits. There are like outfit changes. I liked the idea of like slowly piecing the stage together at the very beginning. Like, it's just like an empty warehouse looking thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd like to play you a song on my boombox.
Yeah.
And sets it down.
Oh, yeah. And you, I was going to, because you mentioned the lamp dance from This Must Be the Place. That one in particular stuck out to me as like, not that like, you know, none of the other songs were like visually interesting or whatever, but that was the one that like, as I was watching it, I was like, wow, like the like thought put into the like what's on stage. Cause like most of it's, you know, once the full band's there, it's the full band playing and all that stuff. But then you get to This Must Be the Place, which is this like sort of quaint, innocent, like love song. And like the lights come up and it's just David, Tina, the two backup singers, and maybe one more person that are lit up, and they're just standing there. There's no running around the stage or anything. It's it captures kind of the feeling of that song, I think.
Yeah, he doesn't have his guitar. It's just him doing the vocal performance. And
like this.
and it's like, yeah, you know, with what we know about like David Byrne and his relationship with the band and the band kind of falling out and like his sort of very, very strange stoic nature. I've read about that song in particular that's like the closest he could come to like writing a love song, because he's just, his personality is so specific, I guess.
Interesting.
And I think this song, I hear this song all the time, and I'm weirdly protective of it, because there's a
this
bunch
must be
of
the place.
Yeah. Because there's a bunch of hippie jam bands that cover this song.
Oh, really?
And it I don't know why it annoys me. I think it's because like the jam bands that play it, it's just like, you're just playing notes. You're not doing it like David Byrne would do it, I guess.
Right, yeah. There's a very particular
way to do it. It's like calculated, like, oh, yeah. I bet you guys didn't expect this song to be covered. Ah, what a deep cut. Yeah. I don't know. It drives me nuts. But this performance is like really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because like they know how to perform it. You don't do like the whole, I mean, the whole band is playing their respective instruments, but you know, it maintains the nature of the song with the performance by making it very like, very toned down in comparison to the rest of the concert. I actually was just watching, it's from a few years ago, but I watched some of an interview that Anthony Fantano did with Sean Lennon.
Okay.
And he asked him about the Imagine cover. He's like, did you see the, you know, the COVID one that everybody saw on? And like the way Sean Lennon described that is kind of like how I feel and how I think you're talking about, like, This Must Be the Place, of like, he says that he doesn't think like anybody can do or does a cover of it right, because he thinks that the original song itself is treading like a, what do you say, like a treading water, treading a thin line between like sincerity and goofiness. Like he's like, yeah, you know, my dad, he like was a really cynical person, and you know, if he had like done that any other way or performed it any more like bombastically, it would have kind of ruined the tone of the song, but he does it just right. And everybody else makes it about their performance, not about like the song. And I think that's like kind of the same thing goes with This Must Be the Place, is it's just like, no, it's like this autistic guy trying to write a love song.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like. And it's very sweet. And I think it's funny you say that, like he like had to try to reach for this, because I honestly think I actually made this comparison before I watched the Sean Lennon interview, so this is just another coincidence. But I think for me, it's up there with In My Life as like best love songs ever, which is a John Lennon song.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've heard that one.
Probably. It's a pretty well-known. You'll hear it a lot at weddings, actually.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah, there's just a sincerity to it that I think is lost on these other bands doing a cover of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also probably me being a little gatekeepy about it. Just like you're some trust fund hippie woot kid traveling the country to these music festivals. Like I'm supposed to think that you understand the depth of this song.
Yeah.
One of those kind of things where I don't say it out loud, but I think it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that this concert film ended with Road to Nowhere, but that album hadn't come out yet.
Right, yeah. I was like, that's the one like hit that they didn't have by now. I'm like, that like to make it like absolutely like perfect. They could have like, because I love that. And he does end American Utopia with Road to Nowhere.
Yeah,
because like now I feel like once Road to Nowhere came out, that's like that's your concert ender.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, because that. So I'm familiar with like three core albums of theirs. And then the rest I'm like a little bit less familiar with. I guess maybe probably. Mostly two. It's
Speaking in Tongues,
Little Creatures.
Oh.
So yeah, Little Creatures.
Behind you.
I have Little Creatures too.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But the Little Creatures one, I think I found at like a secondhand store for like $2.
Oh, okay.
And it's in like pristine condition. I was like, holy shit. Nice. All right. And that's, I love Little Creatures.
Yeah.
There's like the, I think And She Was is like the opening track on that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
And then there's like that weird one about little baby with little toes.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely some weirdness on it. But yeah, Road to Nowhere is like such a perfect ender.
Yeah, I wanted to like highlight the, not just the, you know, the band or the performing too, but I think like what also makes this a special concert movie is like the camera work and the editing that like they get like right up there. And there's some really cool, like there's not a lot of concert movies I've seen where it almost feels like it's a movie, or it feels like with the way that it's shot and edited. And like, holy shit, does it know how to like introduce like thing, like moments or something, I guess. Like I love the first shot that, you know, it's the titles and then it's following his feet, he places down the thing, and then the pan up and like it pans up and he's going like hard with the head bob, and it's like instantly, you're, as soon as it went up to him like head bobbing, I was like, okay, I'm in, I'm good. That's all I needed. And then the reveal of the big suit is perfect. It's perfect because he's off stage for a song. They play the Tom Tom Club song. And then the lights come up and it's like that like low lighting. So it's like his shadow is cast like up above. Yeah. So it's already distorted. So like maybe you wouldn't be able to tell maybe at this point. And then it like does a close up on that and it holds. And the, you know, the song starts playing. And then as soon as that high synth note comes in, the like, wee, it like pans down and he's just walking, like slow walking in. And it's such a perfect reveal. And then Yeah, that was one of those moments that, like, even though it's like the thing you know from Stop Making Sense if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It was so awesome. That song was he comes out to Girlfriend Is Better. Mm-hmm. And it's so fucking awesome. And like he dances in it. It's like he's so fucking goofy and weird, and yet he's like the coolest guy on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's like how do you pull that off? It's entirely unique to someone like David Byrne.
It's exactly what you said about the Imagine. It's like walking that line between cornball weirdness and complete, since it's like he's committing to the bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess like being like a weird autistic dude, he doesn't have any other option but to commit to the bit.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you mean? What is this bit that you're talking about? I don't understand.
You know? Yeah.
But yeah, Bernie Worrell is all over this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And
yep.
I love that dude. I don't know how much you know about him. Like,
did he play with Zappa or something?
He didn't play with Frank. He was like one of the founding members of Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh, okay. Because I knew his name.
Yeah.
When it mentioned it.
Yeah. I think he played it on like two or three Talking Heads records. I think he did a lot of live stuff with him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had a chance to see Bernie Worrell because he died in 2016.
Oh, okay.
He had like three different kinds of cancer. It was bad. Oh, it was really bad. I followed his Facebook page and I would see updates and it was like, took a turn. And I think he had issues with George Clinton and Funkadelic, something about royalties. I don't know. I think whatever. Mm. But he did a free show at Founders, the Bernie Worrell Orchestra. So it was like him and then like a horn section, guitars, bass, all that kind of shit. And he played for probably like 2 to 3 hours. And it was nuts. It was so cool. He like signed my Parliament Funkadelic shit. Like he signed the records and the poster. I think the only time he did anything related to this, though, I think during a song, he did the Genius of Love. He did the ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. Like just a little bit. And then, you know. And probably everyone was like, oh, and then he went back into his like normal stuff.
Sure.
But he did reference it, I remember. But he was a very, very nice guy, like hung out, you know, signed all my shit and was very talcative and nice. So no, I love Bernie Worrell. He's probably one of the best synthesizer keyboard players like around. Like he's a genius.
What year was that you saw him?
2013.
Oh, okay.
I have a poster of it. I don't know if he signed it. It was one of those posters that was just on the wall at Founders. And so I just went and took it off and I was like, this is mine now.
Nice. I note that like it's it starts with Psycho Killer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into Heaven, which is kind of like a slower one, and I was thinking, I was like, this is kind of an interesting like lineup for, you know, usually in concerts you'll get like three, maybe four kind of rock songs, you know, to get the audience kind of like pumped up.
Yeah.
But this like takes its time but like Kalia pointed out that it's kind of, it just goes in line with the way that the band's piecing together. It's like it's building up as the band is building up, and like each song kind of builds and built and gets more, you know.
Yeah.
So it starts slow and then it gets more, and until like the first full song with everybody is burning down the house, which is like, yeah, of course, that's the one that you do when everybody's there.
Yeah.
And then at that point everyone is at like 110 like percent like energy, because that's where like it ends with when they're doing kind of like the breakdown at the end of the song, and David Byrne's like up there like marching with the other guitarist. I forgot his name.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm like looking at, I had the Yeezy video pulled up on the other end, and I just clipped to a part where he's doing like the, and like his legs are like, his dance moves are very, like he's very fluid in the way that like, the one where he's like doing one of these
mm-hmm.
is really good.
Is the one that you're talking about? Is like the straight on shot?
Yeah, I really like that one. Where he's
him at the mic
and he's like,
yeah. That's another good like reveal, like as like of like the reveal moment, like the revealing like the suit or whatever. Is like the first verse of that song. I think you get like some wide shot for like a little bit, but like the first verse into the first chorus of that song is just like close ups.
Mm.
And then it gets to the second verse and it just holds on him for the whole thing, that straight on shot, and as he's just doing like wiggling, and it's really good. It's another really good like just shot choice. And oh, I love the lighting during What a Day That Was too. That's the one where they're all if you're on the 4K one, like the top comment has like timestamps to help.
Yeah, I'm clicking on it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one where they're all like lit from beneath and you like,
and, like they're silhouetted.
You like just see their faces. So then like they'll start doing stuff where they like lean out of the light and it kind of gives like a cool effect.
Oh yeah.
When they start playing with
it. It's like that thing. I feel like it's used as like a demonstration of like lighting, and it'll be it's like Abraham Lincoln, like lit from below and lit from above.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Like, yeah.
How terrifying he looks if he's lit the wrong way.
Yeah.
Kind of like this.
He looks happy. Yeah.
Like there's some shots where like half of his face is like shadowed and like he's got his big buggy eyes. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah. I made this joke and Clea said that I should write it down for the show.
Okay.
So I mentioned that like you could probably get like a good workout, a good kind of exercise program if you just watch this every day and then just do everything David Byrne does. And then I said that you could call it Burn, like David Byrne, burning down the calories.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it was that good, but she said I should write it down.
It definitely made me want to be like, I need to exercise more.
Yeah. Like, come on. This guy's like, because he's like around our age here. I think he's like 30, 31 here.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all, yeah. This is them like at their peak.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we got no excuse. I mean, he's drenched in sweat, but he's doing it. And think like you look at this and you're like, wow, that's crazy that they did that. But then I thought of like partway through, I was like, yeah, this is like on tour. Like he did this every night, like with, you know, maybe a break, you know, once or twice a week or however.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, this is a composite of three different performances too. So it's he did it every night.
Did you read the, like, why he... Apparently, like, how he, like, came up with the big suit idea.
I think that, I read the Wikipedia article about it. Like,
that's pretty much it, yeah. It just said that he is inspired by no theater, like, Japanese, like, one of the classic Japanese theaters. And it said that he was there and, like, one of their set designer or fashion designer or something said, well, everything's bigger on stage. And so he took it literally and like did the suit and it, but like his reasoning behind it is that he said, I wanted my head to appear smaller. It's like, okay, all right. Yeah,
that's one way to achieve that effect. He's all about practical effects.
Yeah. Yeah. He's doing that, the force perspective, like,
yeah, like
Lord of the Rings stuff ahead of time. Yeah. His body is Gandalf and his head is Frodo or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and then it's been parodied to death, but I think we'd have to mention the Kermit the Frog talking heads, like,
oh yeah,
the video of Kermit in the giant suit. I think they're doing
once in a lifetime.
Yeah,
he's letting the days go by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This is probably like the best one to do if it's Kermit singing it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and he's just, I mean, like
similarities between head shape and eyes.
Yeah.
He's very spiritually true. Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if he's been on like Muppets at some point. He'd fit right in.
I mean, if we're talking actors who would fully commit to like, I'm talking to creatures, it would be David Byrne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'd like get into an argument with one of them, like disagree with what they have to say about something, and they're like, but Kermit, listen. Like yeah. fully believing
yeah. you know, that
they're autonomous beings.
Yeah, yeah. I also like just more general, kind of like in line with the, you know, it's, I was saying like it's fun to see him like crack a smile, but it's like not just him, but it's like everybody, it just looks like everyone's having so much fun, and it makes you, it like puts you in kind of like a more like positive mood, because like everybody's smiling, everybody's like really energetic, yeah. everybody's really like into it. They like, I watched a Siskel and Ebert review of this.
Oh.
Because they actually did this in Paris, Texas in the same episode, which is kind of neat.
Well, I was going to say, he kind of does the Paris, Texas thing at the end. He's got like what? The red hat on.
Oh, you thought that?
I thought of Forrest Gump also when he takes, what I thought of.
When he takes off the jacket, I was like, man, who does he look like? He liked that kind of that fit.
Yeah.
Which I love that every like orientation of the big suit was fun. Like he comes out like this with it buttoned up. It's like, okay, awesome. And like they start the next song and he's got it like unbuttoned and it's like, oh, now he's trying to be like cool, but he's still in this yeah. big suit. And then he takes off the jacket and the pants are like hiked and, way up and it's,
well, he's got big pants on too. I feel like yeah. they were big.
Yeah, no, they were. Yeah. But no, then he puts the red hat on and it clicked and I was like, oh, I'm thinking of Donald Trump. Because he's got that red hat and the pants make dumper. Him look like he has a huge dumper. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I can see that too, but he definitely reminds me of Harry Dean Stanton
in Paris, Texas. Yeah, the red hat. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was like, yeah, he fully transitioned from Jimmy Stewart to Forrest Gump over like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which, I mean.
That's the character arc.
I'm pretty sure they did stuff. From what I read on the Wikipedia article, they did music for like another Wim Wenders movie.
So oh, really?
It's like, I think they knew each other. They knew of each other.
Hmm. Maybe that was his like shadow promotion for Paris, Texas. But in the Siskel and Ebert thing, they said that like they it feels like they like enjoy their audience, or like that they don't treat their audience as like lower. They feel like they love being there and love entertaining yeah. the audience. I'm like, yeah, and it's like a positive vibes movie, you know.
A lot of times bands can just kind of go on stage and do their shit and then be like, you know, after, you know, touring for who knows how long, it becomes mm-hmm. very routine. You're like, yeah, all right, cool, thank you. Like, I hate all of these songs that we just played, but you love them, yeah. so thank you. Yeah, that's like one thing that I noticed was like everybody was like, they seemed jazzed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of made me think of another great concert film that I saw earlier this year, which was Prince's Sign of the Times. Which is like,
oh, yeah.
it's a concert film, but there's also like more interstitial, like bits almost. Like he'll be like in a shop and like a woman will walk in and okay. he'll talk to her. And then it's yeah. like, those are kind of like interludes in between songs, but just another concert film where it's like he's just giving it all. And like Prince concerts are,
oh, yeah, that doesn't, yeah.
There's one that I listen to a lot where like, he'll talk to the audience and he is so goddamn smooth sometimes. Like there's like a little lower part and he's like talking to some woman in the crowd and he's like, is it better to give or receive? And she's like, it's better to give. And he's like, give up your seat to that lady in the back. And then, and then he's like, I'm going to call your bluff. And he calls her up and she's like, he gives her the seat. And then, there's one part where he's like, is it better to lead or to follow? And she's like, it's better to lead. And he's like, too bad. And then like he sees another one. He's like, is it better to lead or to follow? She's like, to follow. And he's like, follow me. It's like, everyone's like, oh! It's so funny. It's like, just that man is just like walking charisma. And that's, I mean, that's kind of how I felt watching this. Like, there wasn't any sort of like interstitial bits. Well, I think mm-hmm. I would have loved that. I think it would have been whatever David been cool, Byrne yeah. would have come up with in between the songs to like,
yeah,
you know, little jokes or little conversations to lead in would have been amazing. Mm-hmm. But like that energy, the cinematography, the showmanship, that's what I thought of, was just like on par with like one of those great Prince concerts where everyone is just like going at it and giving mm-hmm. it everything.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking of Prince when I another like comment I made to Kalia was that like watching this, it's almost as, you know, positive and wholesome or whatever as it is, it's also kind of like depressing in a way, because watching it, you're like, I'm never going to see some like a front man as good as David Byrne, or in a different way, but like Prince was another one that came to mind. It's like, I'm never going to see
yeah.
that. I'm never going to see like somebody like that level of a performer. They're like,
I don't, like, yeah, it's you like, can't I don't recreate know who we their, have. Their I don't magic. Know who we have now that's like that. That like yeah. can do that type of thing. Just be mm-hmm. a multi-talented.
And David Byrne's still around. He's not dead.
No, yeah, he's not dead. but it, you know,
he's not going to be running around the stage and, you know, all yeah, that shit.
Or even, I mean, even like Frank, someone like Zappa, like listening to some of his concerts.
That'd be another
like,
one. Yeah,
the interactive elements that he would do, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of shit. Yeah, you don't see it anymore.
Yeah, I thought it was really sweet that they gave the crew. They walked the crew out at the end too. I wanted to mention that.
Oh yeah.
Along with the, you know, just more of the of it just being like a really wholesome thing. It's like, yeah, bring the crew out for a special thanks. The
yeah.
The New Kids on the Block did that when we saw them in DC, and we oh, thought really? That was really cool. Yeah, they at the end of the show, because we saw them at their final show on the tour, so that was kind of part of it. But they like brought out all the crew, and they also like and it was long. It went on for like 5 minutes, maybe. But they read off the list of like everybody's name that like helped them out on Shit. The tour. Like, that's yeah, cool. That's really cool. Yeah. That was a really cool show too.
Making shit like that seem easy is so difficult. There are so many moving parts yeah. that you have to nail to make that shit work. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's crazy. And then to do it every night on tour.
Mm-hmm.
The setup, the teardown, all that shit.
And then did you notice, I had to check. I had to like Google to make sure like I was remembering his face right. But did you see Demi's cameo at the very end?
Who?
Jonathan Demme.
Oh, no. Was he?
It's during the final song, and they're like, they start cutting to the audience, and there's two guys standing next to a camera, and they both have like headsets on.
Oh, that's weird. I just paused to it, and it's right there.
Oh, yeah. He's the one on the right. He kind of looks like a Mitch Hurwitz. That's a kind of
yeah, right. yeah. That's funny.
Bit. Yeah.
He's probably got his little things like, all right, camera right, push in on Tina, like all that.
Yeah.
You know, directing.
Yeah.
That's so, I don't know. I love that, like, directors who do, like, music video stuff as well. Like,
yeah.
The other one who comes to mind Fincher. Is, like, Michel Gondry. He did, like, yeah. I think he did, like, Dave Chappelle's Block Party.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Or, I mean, I guess Paul Thomas Anderson, he did.
I was going to say Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah. He's done, like, Radiohead music videos and Haim videos.
David Fincher started with some. Spike Jones is another one. Spike Jones has some really famous ones. Like Sabotage, that's like a huge music video.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that kind of like music video directors, I think that's like our, I mean, they're starting to get a little older now, so not necessarily our generation, but like I guess the ones that we grew up with as being like, they were like the, you know, when I was in like school, and like high school, they were like the Spielbergs or the Scorseses, I guess, the up yeah. and coming or like just established like PTA, Fincher,
yeah.
Wes Anderson. I don't think even Wes like, Anderson did music
didn't
videos.
Didn't Edgar Wright's done a few music videos?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has. Yep.
I mean, the one that he did that was like the basis of Baby Driver.
Yeah, Blue by Mint Royale. It's a good music video.
Yeah, isn't Noel Fielding in that one?
Noel and Julian are both.
Oh, in Julian's it. In it too?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
And then Nick Frost is in it too. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And then not Simon Pegg, but another guy who's Michael Smiley, who is in Edgar Wright movies. And I'm not sure if he's in The Mighty Boosh, we might have been. But it's like the one you're missing is Simon Pegg. It would have been cool to get like all those guys, like the two duos. And
to get them all in there, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's because like their generation, like 80s and 90s, that's when music videos were huge. So
yeah, they're big productions.
That's how you got your foot in the door. And now it's like you make a TikTok or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like what the... There is sort of a correlation to now, but it's just like, you get popular on YouTube or some social media site.
And then. It makes me, I don't know if you've ever, I've probably shown you this, you might have seen it. It's one of the guys from 5 Second Films, but he made this video that's like, why doesn't MTV play music videos anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this sort of like, you know, he's sitting by his table with his scotch. It's like, ask a record executive. And he's just like, you know, it's like, oh, why doesn't MTV play music videos anymore? And he's like, the only reason this video even exists is to sell this iPhone. Or like, it's like, you know, gratuitous product placement. And then he's like, you know, you can tell it's a little dated because it's from like 2010. But he's like, you know, if MTV was forced to play music videos, it would be for Justin Bieber, the Jonas Brothers, Miley Cyrus. And like, not like, you know, basically the people that make up that complaint are like, they want 90s and 80s music videos because that's like the MTV era.
Yeah.
And he's like, which brings me to my final point. Face it. You're getting old. Like, it's just, it's such a good takedown of that argument of like, why doesn't MTV play music videos anymore? It's like, it's because product placement.
Yeah.
But it's then you got guys like this who just make it because music videos are cool.
Yeah.
And that's like an interesting way to like express something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's basically like a short film, but with music.
Yeah.
For some of these, you know?
Uh huh. And it's fun that like, I know there's others like this, but people who can make classics in multiple genres.
Yeah.
Of like, he made one of the best concert movies ever. And I'm speaking generally, of course, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like arguably the best concert movie ever made. And then like one of the best movies ever made. Yeah. If not, you know, just like one of the best like thriller movies ever made. Like just completely different things. And yet he's like, yep. Yep, got it.
I feel like he treats both of them with the same level of intensity and like care, which again, going right back to that, what we talked about with David Byrne and like treading that line, it's like, yeah, you know, get you a man who can do both. He can make the talking head stop making sense and he can make sounds of the lambs. And like, it's like Howard Hughes, like making an airplane and making a bra.
Yeah.
It's the same mind.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that with that too. Yep. The only other thing I had during that song where it was like, it was like flashing like the random words on the back.
Yeah.
The only one that I gleaned to was video game plus sandwich equals diamonds. Like.
He predicted Minecraft.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just meant like video game and sandwich is all I need to get hard. That's what I was going at. That's how I interpreted it. Okay, I think it's you first this week.
Oh, all right. See, this is tough because I feel like if I give it like a 10, that's kind of like it's
right. Yeah,
but also I think I'm gonna give it a 10. It's great. It's a band at their peak. Like, it sounds good. It looks good. Like, all of the instrumentation is, like, perfect. David Byrne is a silly little guy doing silly little guy things. You know, maybe, okay, maybe, I mean, my only complaint is, like, I wish they had done segues. And, like, you know, maybe the band talking, joking. But, I don't know, maybe.
Ways
maybe
to make it even more perfect.
Yeah. I want another hour of the band being silly and, like, what skits would they come up with? I want those. I want those skits that David Byrne would, you know, I want to see acted out video games plus sandwiches equals diamonds. I want to see where that came from. But no, it was great. It's a great band. Love, I mean, Speaking in Tongues is like one of my favorite albums from them. Yeah, it's great.
Yes, I mean, Speaking in Tongues is probably my favorite. It's one of those that's like, I don't know. I don't know if there's a miss on that album. It's the whole thing is solid. And, you know, maybe we'll get to the skits eventually because we have True Stories in the cup. So,
yeah, that's.
Yeah, it's a 10 for me, too.
No, nice. So, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also maybe biased because it's like, yeah, it's music that I like. It's a band that I like. It's a guy that I like. It's perfect. The worst thing for me is that I'll never get to see it live. You know,
yeah,
that's the thing that sucks the most. But yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, top to bottom. I don't really have much to add that we haven't covered. It's just it's pure joy. I could throw it on like any time probably and enjoy it. I will say too, like we watched Rattle and Hum after this, which is U2's big.
I saw that you logged that.
Yeah, Kali is a big U2 fan. She loves that that concert documentary. It's good, but that one has those interstitial things, and those are probably my favorite part of that because I'm not a huge U2 fan.
It's so, okay.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want her to hear that.
Yeah.
But those were cool. I was like, it gives kind of like moments where they're not being like the band and just kind of being guys being dudes. It's like, yeah, you know, they're likable enough when they're kind of just like making jokes and whatever. And it's like, yeah, that would be cool to see. What year is Rattle and Hum?
Yeah.
88.
Oh, okay.
Because they're touring for Joshua Tree.
Gotcha.
Which I think came out the year before.
Okay. So yeah. It's pre like Bono as a world celebrity philanthropist.
Kind of. I mean, they were always like humanitarians, which is, you know, which is cool about them. You know, they are very like there's a part where there were some parts that were kind of like, oh, shit, that like cool. Like he talks about like they performed on the day that there was like this bombing in Ireland and they were doing because they always do Sunday Bloody Sunday at their show. And he like introed it with that. And I was like, fuck, that was. and like watching, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, they could play that now and it would kind of have the same
resonance
basically any day in the U.S. And, you know, it would apply. you know, they could play it twice and it would still have that because that's
in the time between songs, some sort of tragedy would have happened.
Yeah. Now I'm turning into Bono, just segueing my score for this movie into my speech about how much the world fucking sucks.
Yeah, but he put that album on everyone's iPhone one time.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, what an asshole. Speaking of assholes, here's an ad break.
Are we back? I'm thinking we're back.
You know, I'll still be watching my Oscar movies for the next couple episodes, but as far as up to date with like when these are released, this is my last Oscars update before the Oscars actually air.
Yes.
And it's not going good. I'll say that. It's not going that great. The best one that I've watched in the last week is Babylon. And I think that's only up for like,
did like you like score Babylon?
Or something. Yeah, I gave it a 7. I like, okay. You know, it was, I could have done 6 or 7, but you know,
yeah,
it was a bit long, you know, as is the sentiment. I will say
when I saw that movie, it did not, I saw it in theaters. I don't know where you watched it.
I just watched it at home.
Okay. My theatrical experience, it did not feel its length. I think I was like, you know, in it enough that like, I was like, yes, keep going.
It was just more as it like went along that I started to feel it. And it could just be I'm just hyper aware of that because everything is long right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. I like the main character a lot, that guy, Diego Calva, he was good. I'm just generally not into movies about like excess. Like Wolf of Wall Street, I don't really care for because it's like party, 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 party.
Yeah.
But this had its positives. I love Tobey Maguire. I really like Brad Pitt's character. I like that he was just like a nice guy. Like he wasn't, I expected him to kind of be like a douchebag. And he kind of like he wasn't great in his relationships, but he was just like a nice dude.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was nice.
What did you think of that finale? The just world like with, tour history of cinema.
Oh yeah, I forgot that was fucking weird. But it did make me want to watch Sing It in the Rain again.
Yeah,
that's a great movie to get you thinking about. Just the impact of movies, because that movie is fucking awesome. So I will say that. They picked a good movie for that. But yeah, that, like, Avatar and
Avatar, The Matrix.
That was like, so weird.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I guess, yeah, like, yeah, sure, those are very iconic movies, part of history, but it's just weird to go from, like, Wizard of Oz to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Damien Chazelle, like, buying into his concept. Like, he's pushing all in, and he's just like, yep, this is part of it, too.
Yeah.
I love movies, and I'm going to put screen grabs from all of the movies of history.
Yeah. And it's weird, like, knowing how, like, that might have been the one that he put the most into, or, like, put the most work into, just because it's so big, especially those early scenes where it's, like, showing them filming scenes, and there's, like, tons of people run. There's like the whole army of people running around and stuff.
Well, when you were talking about All Quiet on the Western Front, that's kind of what I was thinking of, was like that scene in Babylon where like they had horses and spears and weapons and extras and everyone's just like,
That was insane. And it was really fun. Like there's the part, they're like having a conversation and then you see Diego Calva's character getting chased by like an army of people in the background. It's very silly. But it felt the least like personal of Damien Chazelle's movies, as much as I'm sure he put the work into it. It felt the least personal, even though he did have the like shoehorned in jazz enthusiast that he's like gotta have in every movie. But yeah, that was like my bigger gripe about it. But most of what I've watched has been complete dog shit. I probably am more positive on movies than your average person, maybe. I think I lean like slightly more positive. I'm just more forgiving of it. I very rarely give a movie a half star, or I don't even give star, like, so like 2 out of 10 ratings is pretty rare. 1 out of 10 is like, it's got to be especially egregious. I've given 3 half stars in the past week. Oof. And I'll say 2 of them weren't Oscar movies, but one of them was The Stranger at the Gate, one of the shorts I mentioned to you. I think I told you about it. Yeah, it's one I was watching before maybe games or something like that. And it's like about this dude who, this like racist dude who was going to like bomb a mosque.
That's right. Yeah. That's.
And then he's like, oh, but then I met them and I'd like, oh, they're people too. Ooh. And yeah, I don't know. It's trying to like humanize him or something, but he sucks. Like, you know, maybe just don't be racist. Don't be a dumb piece of shit. Racist. Like, hey, how about you, like, don't be a pussy who gets brainwashed by the military, idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just. Again, I haven't seen it, but it just seems like a weird thing to be like, to be celebrated for not committing an act of like mass violence.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like, I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm sure, you know, you could probably, because I'm reading the synopsis right now, and I'm sure you could extrapolate bigger ideas, like, you know, the American war machine and what it does to people,
right,
and that sort of brainwashing that really occurs.
It doesn't dwell on that much. You think, like, yeah, there could be some redeeming areas in there, but yeah.
Maybe explore the question of, like, why does this keep happening to people that get out of the military?
Yeah.
Why does this keep, it's a bizarre phenomena that we have no idea where it comes from. Mm-hmm. It just keeps happening.
And also, like, the filmmaking itself was like just very basic. So it's like, it's not even on that front. I'm like, that's where like, if something's really shitty, like concept wise, I'll be like, okay, but I'll still give it points if it's like, you know, if there's some cool editing or some cool shots or something, but there's like nothing. It's just, it's like that, the Martha Mitchell effect, which I forget if I talked about that on that
maybe
episode or not, but, it's just cookie cutter, just basic ass documentary filmmaking. There's nothing, no flair or anything.
Like the Netflix style doc where it's just like shot, reverse shot, talking head shot, maybe drone footage.
Yeah, yeah. More or less, yeah. I watched Blonde too, which was just rough and like, I don't want to say I don't care about, like a lot of people were shitting on it because it's like, it's because she gets raped and she has like a couple abortions and it focuses on that a bit. And, that stuff's rough, but like it bothers me when people like just focus on that because it's like, yeah, there's so many other things that are wrong about this movie though. Like, sure, that stuff's messed up, but like, she should not. I don't think she should be nominated for Best Actress because she sounds Cuban and Marilyn Monroe is not Cuban.
Is Ana de Armas Cuban? Like, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Get a vocal coach. I don't know.
Yeah, right?
It's a biopic.
Yeah. She cries a lot. But it's also like, it's really fucking bizarre. Like, it's kind of like you have to see it to believe it. There's so many weird choices that this movie makes. It's wild. It is absolutely wild. There's actually parts where I think it's the second one, cause she gets pregnant. She has an abortion. And then she's pregnant again. And every time she's pregnant, it plays this like really dramatic music. And then it like switches to like the camera's like in her womb and like showing the like fetus or whatever. And I think it's the second one that she has where it does this. And then like the baby like talks to her. It's like, you're not going to kill me like last time, are you, mommy? And she's like, no, I didn't. She's like, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. And they're like, yes, you did.
You're not the same baby.
Yeah,
What are you talking about? You're not going to kill me like last time.
That's right. She actually says that. Marilyn Monroe. She's like, that wasn't you. That was a different baby or something like that. And she's like, no, that was me. It's always me or something like that.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. It just looks like Gygus from Earthbound.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Holy shit. And then I know this is based on a book that like Joyce Carol Oates wrote. Like,
yeah,
she's like an established novelist. I wonder if the book delves into any of that kind of shit.
I don't know.
Because that'd be a weird, weird, weird interpretation. Like maybe Marilyn Monroe kind of had these thoughts to herself. I don't know. That's so strange.
And then like something that kind of like pissed me off more. I don't know if I'm not trying to like diminish the other like heinous shit that it shows, but like I hate it in biopics or whatever, where so like Marilyn Monroe died because she OD'd on barbiturates, and but like, you know, nobody knows exact, she was just kind of found dead,
yeah,
in her house or whatever.
She ate 15 ham sandwiches.
Yeah. And but like the movie does something that I hate where like it tries to give a reason. It's not just like she doesn't just OD because, you know, she was an addict and, you know, she's beaten down by
very
years
troubled
of being in the system. But it's like she finds out that somebody died and that causes her to OD. And it's like it's giving a reason. It's like making up a reason. And then I looked up and the person that they say died, because it was Charlie Chaplin's son. That she knew and she was in a relationship with earlier in the movie and stuff, and in real life she was in a relationship with him. He didn't die, and like he died like 5 years after she died, so like
we're just making shit up.
Yeah, we're just making shit up. And I think that's so whack to be like, yeah, this is why it happened, because she was sad about an ex.
That seems...
Huh? Whatever.
What? Are you being corrected in real time?
It's still stupid.
Pants. Big okay. David Byrne pants on fire. What's she saying?
She's saying that it's not a bio. It's not supposed to be a biopic.
Well, but it's a real person. We're just making shit up then?
It's meant to be a reimagining.
Oh. Well, then have Quentin Tarantino direct it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's still stupid.
Marilyn Monroe enlists in the army and goes over to Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
That was like the same time, right?
What?
What? When was Marilyn Monroe's big active years?
50s.
Okay. Well, she goes to Nazi Germany to fight Hitler in the Quentin Tarantino blonde biopic.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly when she
blew up. But I feel like if you're blending real shit with imaginary shit, people are stupid. They're not going to tell the difference. They're probably going to go along with it and think that that's why she died.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like you have some sort of, if you're going to try to treat the weight of like all of the terrible shit that happened to her while also having all of this Hollywood fake shit to like be dramatic, I feel like that's sort of disrespectful to like the stuff that she went through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like if you're just making shit up, it's like, okay, well maybe that shit didn't happen. I don't know. The whole thing sounds made up and dramatized. Maybe she didn't. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it does it feels very like I thought of like Elvis, the one that
I was going to say, you're talking about how bizarre it is. It
yeah.
Sounds similar.
Yeah. In a different way, but yes, very, very bizarre. Very like you'll see, like I was like kind of doing the thing where you're, if it's a movie that you're not like super into, you'll be kind of like maybe Googling about it as you're watching it. And there's a lot of like beats in the movie where they like recreate photos like exactly. Like there's a scene where she's with because she was married to Arthur Miller. And there's like a scene where they're just like talking, but then like you look it up and there's like photos of like that exact, like, you know, how it looks in the thing, and then stuff with her and, and Charlie Chaplin Jr. There's like some pictures with them and stuff. And
that's cool, but if the rest of the production is dog shit, then that's like a cheap way to be like, oh wow, look at this exact side by side.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, just very, very weird choices, just with
it sounds like a movie made for TikTok.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah,
because it's I've seen people talk about like Netflix movie, they're like, this Netflix movie was made for like reaction GIFs, like that was the primary, and like people have that in their mind when they're making something.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes I feel like movies are this, like, they make a movie that's like, okay, but the kids are going to take this and they're going to add their own underscoring of dramatic music and put Subway Surfers underneath it. And that's how the movie's going to live on.
Yeah.
They're going to add all this other dramatic shit. Or like, I don't know if there's like TikToks I've seen that are like, they'll have AI generated voices explaining the plot of the movie while the movie's happening. It's really, really stupid, but it's like, that's kind of what I feel like these movies are for, the sort of surface level, deep, dramatic movies that will live on.
Yeah.
On TikTok.
So yeah, it sucked, but it was one of the more entertaining of the ones, just because of how often I was just like blown away by the choices that were made. And also, it's produced by Plan B Entertainment, which I thought was pretty good.
It's like, have you ever seen that? It's like one of those Facebook chainmail forward things, but it's like an anti-abortion one. But it's like, this woman tried to have an abortion, but she gave birth, and like the baby came out holding the IUD.
Oh yeah, yes.
That's what I thought of with like. the baby talking to her, like going yeah. inside of her uterus to like personify this child.
Yeah. Oof.
I kind of want to see it just for that kind of shit now. It sounds yeah, insane.
You know, if it was not almost 3 hours, it would be probably a wholehearted recommendation. Like, I'd be like, yeah, you should
put it in the dud cup.
Yeah. I'd be like, definitely check it out. And that's that honestly also factored into why I rated it so low. It's because it's, yeah, another that's just too big for its britches.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if it had been more of a, like, normal length, I might have, you know, been a, not positive, but maybe, you know, a little closer to that, I guess. But, yeah, just it really started to drag towards the last, like, half hour or so.
Yeah. And then, at the time of this recording, at least, yesterday was Twin Peaks Day, February 24th, 11:30 a.m., when Dale Cooper enters the town of Twin Peaks. So the local theater did a showing of the first two episodes, which was basically, because like the pilot's 90 minutes, so it was like 2.5 hours we watched.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun. I, at the end of the second episode, I wanted to stay in my seat and keep watching the rest of the show on the big screen. But I forget how tight of a pilot the first episode really is to like establish characters, motivations, and relationships. It's so well done. And I think, you know, when I initially tried to watch Twin Peaks, I was put off by the soap opera-ness of it, the melodrama, the like extreme emotional reactions the characters give. But I think, you know, after watching more David Lynch shit and kind of getting his ethos and like kind of his ideas behind it, I think like Grace Zabriskie deserves awards for playing Sarah Palmer.
Mm.
Like her, like it, you really. You feel for him. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of crying going on, but it feels even like Andy, when it's kind of like played for laughs, that like he can't take pictures of crime scenes because it like it makes him so upset. It's like it's kind of played for laughs, but like he does it in such an authentic way that it's like I feel bad for him, and I almost start like when they unwrap Laura Palmer and he loses his shit, and I'm like, yes, I feel that too, Andy.
Hey, you're talking about, you mean Bobby?
No, Andy the cop, the tall guy.
Oh, yeah. For some reason I was thinking Andy was the husband who's like brain dead.
Leo.
I don't know why I thought Andy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, Leo. So Leo was my costume last night. There was a costume contest at the Wealthy. And so I slicked my hair back like a real piece of shit, put on the sunglasses, put on a party hat, and I had a little gold kazoo. And I was like the scene from Twin Peaks when like Shelley and Bobby are having like the little party.
Yeah.
And Leo's comatose, and he's kind of sitting there like Lieutenant Dan, just like.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, nice. That was fun. A lot of crazy characters. Dr. Jacoby.
Mm-hmm.
Is really great as her therapist, and also just a weird freak. Because the first episode ends with the locket being found under the rock, and then the episode two ends with him like listening to like an audio tape that like Laura left for him, and then he's like holding up the locket, and he starts crying in the episode. It's, I don't know, every character is just feeling like the most extreme emotion possible. But it's like what's brilliant about that show is like how it balances all of that super emotional shit with like humor and then also like legit horrifying terror.
Mm-hmm.
like when Sarah Palmer sees Bob for the first time. Yeah. I guess two times, because like the first time was like a mistake, like he was in the reflection of a mirror of shot on accident. Yeah. He wasn't casted in the show, he was like,
yeah, and, yeah.
He's like an, you know, assistant something.
Uh-huh.
And you just see him very briefly, but like Sarah Palmer screams. And then in the second episode, it's like that shot Donna is over, and then like they embrace. There is some fun like X-Files style edits that are very of the time, because it's like Donna's over there and Sarah Palmer looks at her and she's like, Laura? And they do one of those like face swaps with like Sherilyn Fenn's face, or not Sherilyn Fenn, Cheryl Lee, sorry. Her face like kind of superimposes over her, and it's like, oh, it's not great.
Yeah,
you get the idea.
Yeah.
And then like that shot of Bob like underneath looking up at her, it's like, it's so spooky.
Yeah.
It's so terrifying. And like all the shit with Bob is creepy, but I think the other one that really comes to mind with how terrifying that show can be is, I think, the scene when Laura's cousin Maddie gets killed. Spoilers for Twin Peaks. You've seen it.
Yeah, I have.
She's played by Cheryl Lee. It's
I thought
a brown wig.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's a slow-mo scene, and it's Bob running, and he like leaps over the chair and like strangles her.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
Yeah, I mean, that's what David Lynch is good at mixing the horror with comedy. I mean, that's like Eraserhead top to bottom. Like, the whole movie has this like eerie, foreboding feel, and yet you have scenes like with the father-in-law and whatever.
Yeah. And the little chicken legs kicking and squirting out mysterious brown liquids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, I've said it a million times, but I think that's, you know, that's close to the right way to watch David Lynch movies, is if it's funny to you, it was probably funny to David, and you don't need to like think really, really hard about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's very much, you know, on the sleeve.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good time. I definitely we've tried to rewatch the series before, but it's just like with everything else that we're watching, it's hard to like add it back into the rotation. But it's been nearly 3 years since we watched The Return, so I want to rewatch it again to get to The Return, because there's some stuff that, you know, I haven't seen in 3 years, and I need to revisit it.
Well, maybe we gotta set up that doing the vault thing or whatever with the Twin Peaks thing,
putting like The Return as a movie.
I think I want to do it like as a vault episode, but do it like, I guess we could do The Return or the whole thing, but yeah, like do it as like a, you know, a series, like retrospective.
Okay.
I think
would
be cool.
Yeah. I'd be down to do that too.
And maybe that's like the motivation to, you know, get through it or whatever.
Yeah. Cause I bought this box set on Amazon last year that was like from Z to A.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a shell, and it opens up, and it's like 15 discs. It's got like, it's got all the shit too. It's got like Fire Walk With Me, but it's got, I think it's got the same like missing pieces supplements that like the Criterion release of Fire Walk With Me has. So it's like, it's as complete as it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Because it's funny. I feel like every year there's at least one rumor, like David Lynch will say something cryptic and they're like, oh my God, guys, Season 4 of Twin Peaks, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, no, probably not.
Probably not.
Half of those people are dead now. It's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, Angela Badalamenti, like, some of them died this year. Or, I guess, 2022, but Angela Badalamenti died. Julie Cruz died. That was tough, because she's in the pilot at the Roadhouse, like, singing the song.
Yeah.
And it's just, that music is just so iconic.
I think she was in The Return, too, in an episode. Yep. She was one of the
scenes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe the last one. One of the last ones, I think, is Julie Cruz. But the guy who played the one-armed man died in 2022.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Who played Wyndham Earl died. Kenneth Welch.
Yeah. Yep.
And then someone else. Well...
Well, like, I guess the Log Lady and Harry Dean Stanton both died, like, when they made the Return.
They filmed the Log Lady stuff, like, 2 years before it came out. Like, they filmed her stuff in 2015.
Yeah. Oh, Miguel Ferrer, that's another one.
Miguel Ferrer died.
He was in The Return, but, like, that was it.
No, but she died in 2022. I feel like December, but the older woman that James goes to see in season two.
Yeah.
Which it's like, it's still
sad. She probably
wasn't
coming back, but.
Yeah. But that's like the, you know, David Lynch has kind of left the show material that people kind of don't care about. Or, yeah. You know, it's like, eh. Oh, the dude that plays the botanist guy. That Laura, I think he has like the missing page of Laura's diary. He's like the shut-in who never leaves his house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
He died in 2022 as well, so just a ton of people from the show are gone.
Damn.
I do think though I would like David Lynch to like make one more movie before he's too old to do it. I would I don't know.
Cuz his last movie, or
literally
like Twin Peaks.
Anything.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Twin Peaks,
I'm mostly okay with, like, as far as like an ending you're going to get with Twin Peaks, I'm mostly okay with where it ends. I mean, I like the ending a lot. There's definitely some, not that it's surprising, again, with Twin Peaks, but like there's definitely some hanging threads that I wish were a little more handled.
Sure.
But for the most part, I think it's pretty, like I'm pretty good with it.
Yeah.
And
I feel like the threads that they do tie off are very satisfying. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like Ed and Norma finally getting together.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
And the fact that like Everett McGill came out of retirement to like portray Big Ed.
Yeah.
Norma's gone too. She died.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
She died like right after that too. Yeah. And yeah.
Jack Nance is gone. I mean, he's been gone for a while, but.
Yeah. Just some little things to where I'm like, yeah, you know. If he does another season, there's probably going to be just as many things that he opens up that, you know, doesn't close up. So,
because I feel like, you know, I remember the show coming back. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it, you know, back then. I hadn't really seen it. So I knew it was like a big deal. But I feel like a lot of people were like, what the hell is this? This is not the quirky, you know, campy soap opera type. Like, it's dark. It's a very dark show.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
With like some extreme violence that it's like pretty rough.
And but then you have the moments like fucking Michael Cera.
Someone was dressed up like him at the screening last night.
Yeah.
Just that one little bit role where he's it's so good.
It's super dark so that it can be offset with just everything with Kyle MacLachlan, pretty much.
Yeah.
Dougie Jones.
It's the one time I will ever shed tears of happiness over the FBI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that is such a perfect like, it makes the Dougie Jones shit worthwhile.
Yeah.
To have him, like, have the music swell and be like, I am the FBI.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
Ah,
yeah,
it's such a perfect moment.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Clea like hates that. I thought like the same thing. I was like, no, like withholding it that long, and then you get it. It's like it's really good. Like, sure, yes, I would have liked more Dale Cooper. I'm not gonna say that. It would have been cool.
Yeah,
but also like making you wait so long, and then he's back, and it's like it's perfect. He just like gets up, rips all the Ivy stuff out, and And also, I think Dougie Jones is fucking hilarious. So there's also that.
what does he say at the slot machine? He's like, "Hello,
yeah, hello." And he does it like every single time.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then there's again like genuine moments of like very very scary imagery. Like I think. The image of Laura Dern seeing herself at the motel is like one of the creepiest things I've ever seen in a show. And it's so simple, but it's just like so unsettling.
It's because he, I think at least part, it's because he, like, it's that Lynch style where like, he doesn't make things try to look real necessarily.
Yeah.
Like all the special effects look, I don't know if I want to say low budget, because I think it's intentional, because like he could get the budget to make the shit look more realistic if he wanted to. So it's intentional. It's intentionally uncanny or something.
Like the part where Sarah Palmer, like her face.
Yeah, I thought of that part. But she like takes it off. Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah,
visually it's if it was like a prestige show, it would be like,
yeah,
but it's like, no, it's just like they went into like Adobe After Effects and like, you know, N64 graphics just moved her face off.
Yeah.
But like that uncanniness is what makes it so creepy and affecting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Cause like, I don't think of him, like he for sure is like a partly horror director, but I don't think of his movies as horror movies in the way that I think of other ones, because like the horror is usually just like a small part of it. Mm-hmm. But I think he's like one of like the like best horror directors ever, like specifically like horror, like he knows how to tap into like just primal fear or something. Like no matter how many times I see it, the diner scene in Mulholland Drive, it's like you know it's coming. I've seen it a million times. It's fucking terrifying every single time. It's crazy. It's like once I see a movie enough, I'm gonna be desensitized to all the scary moments. Like I might still get that sort of like suspense, sort of, you know, that excitement, but like all that, the fear is gone. But every time with that scene,
it's that lead up. You see the wall and you see it. It's like that push in, and like the way that it like slides in the frame, so and
the noise and too. The it's just
yeah. Go watch Twin Peaks.
Yeah. And see if we can. You can see my suit's starting to become distorted. We got one more, we got one more, and then we're gonna have that person come on the week after, right?
Yes. So
2 weeks.
Wait. Okay. Hold on.
Because you said the 11th or something is when they said they could.
We're recording with him on the 11th.
Okay. So we'll do a cut poll. Okay. Next one, we'll do his.
Okay.
Okay. So for next week, we got a movie. Next week's movie is from 1985, directed by Paul Schrader, Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters.
Okay.
Really interested in checking this
one
out.
I know that name. I know Paul Schrader.
Yeah,
what else is he?
He wrote Taxi Driver. He did First Reformed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I see people posting screenshots of his takes on like
Facebook
and Twitter.
Yeah, I think he's
very opinionated.
Yeah. But he's done some, I mean, Taxi Driver alone, that's like his staple in the movie business. But First Reformed is really good. He had a movie a couple years ago called The Card Counter that I want to see too. American Gigolo.
Born in Grand Rapids, went to Calvin College.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Nice.
And yeah, so Mishima, I think it's all in Japanese too. And it might be his first movie that he directed.
Because
he was just a screenwriter at first.
No, it looks like Blue Collar from 1978.
Oh, okay.
Blue Collar, Hardcore, American Gigolo.
Oh, he directed. I thought he just wrote American Gigolo. Okay.
Cat People.
Fuck.
Okay. And then Mishima.
Okay. Yeah, I was wrong. I thought he just wrote some of those. Damn. Okay.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. Here's a biopic, maybe not that well. I'm not sure. It just sounded like a very interesting story. I read about the actual guy and, yeah. Should be, well, I mean, if you haven't seen this stuff, maybe this won't mean anything, but it's apparently a very Paul Schrader-esque biopic. So, well, see how it goes. Okay, so if you don't want to be spoiled for Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, you can rent it on Amazon Prime or Apple TV. It looks like that's it. Those are the only ones I'm seeing. So watch it before next week's episode. These come out every Wednesday at 7 p.m. EST on YouTube and Twitch in video form, as well as Apple Podcasts and Spotify in audio form. We also have social pages on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And that's about it. That's all that said. I'm just an animal looking for a home. Share the same space for a minute or two. TJ, aka J Spot Jack Cheese, and with me as always.
As always, same as it ever was.
Same as it ever
was. Same as it ever was. I'm Nick, aka Dr. Funk on Twitch.
And you love me till my heart stops. That's where the episode ends.